Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Yes, Another Teen Movie. I'm here on video call with the lovely Heather Renton.
You've got me on video call. It's weirder video call. Like, I can finally see you when you talk.
Watch me on your video phone.
Whoa.
I've got Heather on my video phone.
True. How are you, Big James?
Yeah, I'm good.
Any gossip?
Gossip? No, not really. I'm getting my kitten next week, so that is so exciting.
Have you decided on a name yet?
We're thinking of the name Barnaby.
Oh, good.
Dude, that's cute. Yeah. It would also
be same vibe.
Go quite well with Balthazar. So I think our cats would be like friends in the same way that we're friends.
I doubt it. But...
No, Balthazar would be like a curmudgeonly old uncle to cute little Barnaby.
Yeah, he'd be like, "Oh, I hate this."
Yeah, he'd pretend not to like him, but secretly he'd have like a soft spot for that little scamp.
Wee fluffy paw.
Yeah.
My mum was loving the cat name chat, she said. Shout out to my mum who listens.
She listens to the last episode.
Yeah. She's like, "Oh, I don't know the movie, but I've seen the John Malkovich version, you know, of the play, but the cat name thing was very funny." Oh, okay.
I've seen the John Malkovich version. I'm sure that's a lot better and more sophisticated than
Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny to think of your mom listening to us talking about, like, I don't know, how hot like it is when the Selma Blair and Sarah Michelle Gellar kiss. Or
I know, my mom's always like, "I learned so much about you." She won't shut up about the masturbation with cuddly toys conversation.
Yeah, that's the like worst part for me is that Ali's mom has told me that she's listened, but oh, she said she couldn't remember what episode she listened to. But like, what if it was that one?
Yeah, no, Ali's mom, stop listening now.
Yeah.
Like, we should have like a parental advisory sticker like on us, like no parents should listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. Especially not our parents.
So, Sisterhood of Traveling Pants.
I know.
Whoa, there's...
Was this Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, it seems like, is kind of like a classic film for a lot of people. Also, it's a book, and I think that a lot of people read the book and watched the film as teens, and so many people love it. It's kind of like a cult classic, but in a very uncool way. But I have never watched the book, nor read the book or watched the film. Had you?
No, and this came out in 2005. This is peak me. I was 14 then. I can't believe I've never seen it. But I remember the book being very popular and being in the library. But I always thought it sounded stupid. I was always put off by the fact that the jeans magically fit them. I was like, that's dumb. Like, I'm not going to read that. That's dumb.
Even as a teen, Heather was very discerning about her reading material. She was like, no.
Yeah. A jeans that fits everyone, and then it put me off that they write on it. It just seemed so stupid. I was really at the time. I was like, "This is dumb." You know what, Gemma? I'm glad I didn't watch it then or read it. I would have been way too jealous of their lives.
I know. This is like all the kind of stuff that you want to happen to you as a teen. Well,
exactly.
I mean, not all of it.
The good things.
The good stuff that happens to them. But yeah, it is such a great. Like such a great story. I actually think I remember reading the beginning of the book when I was a teen.
Really?
Yeah, but also thinking like, this is dumb, I'm putting it down. But you're right, it came out in 2005, which is at the peak of teenness for us.
Yeah.
A lot of the teen movies that we review are the ones that we actually like are from when we actually weren't teens, so either from when we were children or now. But this is in like the rare window of time when we were actually the target audience for this movie when it came out, but neither of us saw it. But like you said, glad we didn't, because now we're able to look back at it with total objectivity.
Yep.
And analyze the film for you guys.
It would have been my Bible if I would have read this at that age, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Also,
I remember reading. Oh, sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, that was supposed to be the point of the video call.
Sorry. I'm not looking at you. I'm just looking at myself. No, I'm not. I'm too tiny.
This film is also stars some teen royalty from like other like very, very big teen shows. So we've got Blake Lively, Best known as Serena Vanderwoodson from Gossip Girl.
We should have like a Gossip Girl alarm whenever you mention Gossip Girl.
Hey,
I'm gonna edit that in.
This is relevant. This is relevant to the story.
It's always relevant to me, Gemma.
Three of the characters went on to, or already did in Alexis Bledel's case, I think, star in like three extremely iconic teen shows.
Yeah.
So Alexis Bledel, like Rory Gilmore from Gilmore Girls, and America Ferrera, famously Ugly Betty. Alexis Bledel and Blake Lively pretty much play the exact same characters that they do in Gilmore Girls and Gossip Girl, just in a different environment. I never actually watched Ugly Betty. Were you a fan?
Me neither.
No, me neither.
And can I make a confession as well to you and the listeners? Here we go.
Oh my God.
I've never watched Gilmore Girls.
I knew you were going to say that. It's not a you show. I don't think you'd like it very much.
But no, people say I love it. Even my boss, who's like a 42-year-old man, was like, Heather, you're such a Gilmore Girl. You are a Gilmore Girl.
You actually, in a way, I can see where he's coming from. Yeah, you do have like the talk fast thing that they, like the witty banter, the references, the way that they talked. But it is, as a show, it is very kind of cutesy and wholesome, maybe like a little bit like too much so. But if you are ever going to start watching it, this is the right time of year. It's a very like autumnal show. It's like a cozy fire on a glass of red wine. Yeah, it is always autumn in that show.
So I'm actually,
but you've got a taste for it now from seeing that film, because
it's all like that.
Yeah, well, Rory Gilmore is just like a whiny little boring girl.
Oh, yeah.
Just like Lena. So Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Yeah, crazy. Me and Gemma, there's four storylines. So we've decided to each tackle one storyline, right, Gems?
Yes, we've decided to give each other a challenge with a timer. We're each going to do two storylines. And we have 7 minutes to recap.
Recap
individually this character's storyline. So basically the film, kind of just to like loosely introduce you to the concept, the film follows these four girls as they go on like to spend their best friends, but they're all spending their summer vacation somewhere else. So one of them is staying at home, but three of them are going away, and it's like the first time that they've not all spent the summer together or something like that. So it follows the four of them, and they're all connected by this pair of pants which, as Heather revealed, somehow magically fits them all. So they find it in a thrift shop, and even though like one of them is like Blake Lively, who's like 6 foot tall and like a size 4, and then America Ferrera is like way smaller than her and like really curvy, and the jeans somehow magically fit both of them and like the two in between girls as well. So they buy the pants and they decide to share them over the summer, because they think they're magic and they're going to bring them good luck. So the film follows their like individual storylines wearing the pants. A good summary.
That's a good summary, but I'm glad that the pants didn't get that much. That's why I was so put off by it as a teen. I was like, oh, these stupid pants. Of course they fit everyone. They're stretchy. They're like early 2000 jeans. Like,
they're not real denim. They're like that stretch material.
Exactly. It's like when jeans were sort of leggings, kind of that.
Jeggings. Oh, God. That's a word I never want to hear. Yeah, I did too.
Weird fashion.
Yeah.
Lots of jeggings and like moccasins underneath them.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. Yeah,
I still have the moccasins. Boys love the moccasins.
I'm sure boys did love the jeggings back in the day.
Don't know. Okay, so yeah, that's a good summary. You want to go first, Gemma?
Yeah, I'll go first. Let's start with Bridget.
Bridget. Yeah. Okay. Go. Okay, I'm gonna give you a 7-minute timer.
Okay.
I'm just gonna keep an eye on the clock. Okay.
Go for
ready,
it.
Go.
Okay. So Bridget. We're introduced to her at the start as she's Blake Lively's character, by the way.
That's good to mention.
There's a kind of voiceover at the start with America Ferrera talking about like how they've like about their friendship and all the stuff that they've gone through together. And one of the most difficult things that they've gone through is that Bridget's mom died of suicide, which is really really shocking for a teen movie.
I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, I mean, this seemed pretty like fake to me, but the priest at her funeral was like talking about like why she would have taken her own life when she was so beloved. It's like, I'm pretty sure priests don't do that. Like, you're not really supposed to address that. Anyway, so she, which is very unusual for a teen movie. It's quite heavy.
Yeah.
Usually when they have a dead parent in a teen movie, like, as we know, like classic teen movie signifier, they always have died of like a horrible illness or a car crash or something, something that kind of like, you know, makes them saintly and kind of like reifies them, and you know, they would never have like chosen to take their own life. That's a bit too heavy for a teen movie. So I thought that was really interesting. So she's quite like, her dad seems quite wealthy, but like very distant from her. And her storyline is that she is going to soccer camp.
They love soccer in this movie.
They love a bit of soccer. In Mexico. So she's off on the bus. They're all singing like these Arriba chants. It's very like, very stereotypically Mexican, I would say. So she goes to this, it's an all-girls soccer camp, and all her like the other three at the start are like, oh, you wouldn't have gone if you knew it was going to be all girls. So she's kind of the boy magnet. I mean, it's Blake Lively, so yeah, she's newsflash, she's fit. So she goes to this soccer camp. It's all girls, but she manages to find one boy to fall in love with, who is one of the soccer coaches. She's 17. It's kind of unclear how old he is. He's a student though. He's at Columbia. So he's probably like, I don't know. I'm hoping he's like 18, 19, you know, like not like way older than her, because of what ends up happening. But she becomes kind of obsessed with him. Like her storyline throughout the film is actually quite boring, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, it gets really interesting at the end when she like opens up about her mom and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
that's like,
like her actual storyline is basically just her chasing after this guy and constantly finding him on the beach. So every time she walks down to the beach, he's just sitting there like moodily kind of like staring at the waves. It's also one of those, like, because it's a movie and they only have like a bit, and because there's four storylines. So basically like it's 2 hours long. So including like intro and like the end, they have about 20 minutes to devote to like each character individually. So you don't really understand why she's obsessed with this guy. It's just like, you don't get to see any of his personality whatsoever.
No.
The only thing we know about him is that his name's Eric and he goes to Columbia. That's it.
And he's hot. He looks a bit like Tone, I think, in a sporty soccer way.
That's actually true. He's kind of like early noughties Tone. Yeah. Heather was like,
my dream man.
So she's super, he's very early noughties looking, like the kind of like bleach blonde hair, like long fringe, like soccer boy. She's like a soccer superstar. So she's like, she shows off to impress him a lot. And
she's not very subtle in her flirting, eh? She's
absolutely not. She's super
I was respecting
full on.
That.
I know, me too. I actually like that. She really really goes for it. She's like she's the predator.
She really is. Yeah. I like that about the movie, yeah.
She hunts him down to this like cantina where the coaches have gone drinking, like when the students are supposed to be in bed. And she really she's like, what, I'm not drinking, but I might have to if you don't dance with me. And then she like pulls him and then like she's like sexy dancing with him. I was like, oh, this is like quite full on actually for like a young teen movie, if you know what I mean, where it's not like, you know, horny stuff.
But I assumed because she was so in tune with her sexuality or like really going for this guy, I assumed she had loads of sex already.
Yeah, me too. Especially like at the start when they're coming up with the rules for the pants. Alexis Fidel is like, only the wearer is allowed to remove these pants, and she's like looking at Bridget.
Yeah.
So I thought that as well. I thought that she kind of like, you know, gone a bit like sex mad after her mom died or something like that to kind of like, you know, feel something. I assumed that was going to be like the storyline. But she actually ends up losing her virginity to him. Which happens at the end of the film. So she's been like pursuing him the whole time, and he's been like kind of reluctant to
give it
because he's a coach and she's a student. But they end up that she gets the pants for the second time. So there's kind of two cycles of the pants, and the first time nothing works out for them, but then the second time each of them has them, something magical happens. So she loses her virginity to him on the beach, but then the next day when she's sending the pants to Lena, she writes a letter about it and says that it was what the thing that she wanted more than anything, but now that she has it, she feels really empty. I thought that was really sad.
Yeah, that's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really sad. She really regrets it. It's kind of...
Yeah, I think she just realizes that, like, she just wanted something to obsess about and focus on so that she wouldn't have to think about her mom. But then when she gets it, she realizes that she didn't, like, you know, he's not, like, the one or whatever. Not that you need to lose your virginity to the one. I mean, if you did, you'd be waiting a, like, fucking long time. Most people would be waiting until they were in their late 20s. So it's, you know, I mean, I think it does a good job of not, it's not like, she doesn't regret it in like a slut-shamey way. You know what I mean? It's not, she's not like, oh, I'm no longer pure or anything, you know, anything like that. It's, she just kind of realizes that she was kind of chasing after like love. And you can really see in the film, like her dad, like he said, like all the other girls' moms send them like tampons and shampoo and stuff to the camp. Yeah. And like, you know, her dad sends her one letter of two lines printed on his company notepaper saying like, I hope you're well, things are good here, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, she doesn't, she probably has never had much male affection in her life, and that's why she's kind of chasing after boys all the time. That's just some junior armchair psychology. But I'm entranced.
Yeah.
I found her storyline boring all the way through, but then like very compelling at the end.
She has some depth all of a sudden in the end. But what's strange is that he comes, the guy, the coach, comes to visit her.
What's up with that?
And then he says, what happened between us was my fault, which kind of made it like, as if he kind of forced himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, I know. Strange. He goes all the way to Baltimore to tell her, or well, not Baltimore, but Bethesda, wherever they live, to tell her that what happened between them. Yeah, I think he feels bad because he was older than her and stuff. And she's like, well, I didn't exactly tell you to stop. I think he just felt bad about it because he felt like he abused like the kind of teacher-student kind of relationship. But then they hug and they say like friends and stuff. That is weird though.
That is weird that he shows up.
Wouldn't you just like, call someone?
Exactly.
seems like a dramatic thing to do.
Very dramatic move, yeah.
Very dramatic. I also wrote down that Blake Lively looks 25 in this film and the rest of them look 14.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is kind of off-putting when you look at them as a group. But yeah, that's... Did I go over time?
You did go over time, but that's fine. I allow it.
Thanks, Heather.
Allow it, fam. I'll tackle the next one. I'll tackle Lena.
Okay.
Lena's Alexis Bledel. Alexis Bledel, is that her name?
Bledel, yeah.
And she is like the shy, boring one of the group. She wears like long A-line skirts. I used to have a friend who dressed like that in Rome, who was like, this German girl who's very Christian. And she once told, she was such a Fraulein. And she once told, I was like, Leonie, have you ever been drunk? She's like, well, one time I had a little bit of whiskey ice cream.
Whiskey ice cream? Yeah. Wow. But what she went wild in Rome, the city of like sex and pleasure.
Well, she did lose her virginity, get her first kiss and lose her virginity in Rome or something. She went full circle. Yeah.
Oh my god, she got like the all in one treatment.
She got corrupted. Yeah. Fuck. She got corrupted by she was so funny. I hope she's doing well.
So
Alexis Bledel is called Lena. She's like the shy, boring one, whatever. Doesn't wear jeans ever, just skirts. And she goes to Greece. And for the longest time, I was like, why the fuck is she in Greece? Turns out she's half Greek or fully Greek.
Fully Greek, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so she's staying with her grandparents. And this is honestly, Gemma, if I would have seen this at 16, I wouldn't have settled for anything else. Like, I would have been like, I'm going to Greece. Santorini, here I come. Like, what a dreamy...
Boys, watch out. Fishermen, You better put on a red alert, because Heather's,
Gemma,
Heather's,
you know,
swimming.
You know I have a soft spot for Greek men. You know I love Greek men.
Oh, Heather loves Greek men. Heather started going to my hairdresser just because she fancied this one Greek hairdresser who was hanging around one time when I was getting my hair cut. Heather came in, started chatting to him, then she was like, I think I'm going to make this my hairdresser. And then they went on a date.
Yeah, we did go on a date.
It was, he asked her on a date while he was cutting her fringe.
Oh, it was the sexiest hair... like, sexiest haircut I've ever had. Like, he was just, like, cutting my fringe, being so close to my face, being like, tonight, tomorrow, I work here, then I go to this, I suggest you join. And I was like, oh my god, yes. And then I just ran out, not giving my number or anything. I was so startled.
But wasn't the date, like, really shit, though?
Yeah, he was really shit. He was kind of boring.
Yeah. But... he was cute, then, though.
He was hot. Vasilis, you're a hot man. And but I remember going in once to say hi or something, and then he gave me a full-on kiss on the mouth when I was with Ellen. I was like, whoa, that's so intimate.
Oh, yeah. he did that with every customer.
That's Greek men, you know? They're so passionate.
But tell us about Lena's Greek man.
Sorry, yeah.
Who I think, from like kind of like memes and stuff that I've seen about this movie, is I think kind of like a teen like idol. Like I think Kostas is like,
oh, he's hot.
Yeah, he's
Kostas is a hot man. He's a kavala. Yeah, he's like a hot woman in Greek. So she goes to Greece and then she's sitting. You know what cracks me up, Gemma? When people in films like do art and then it's really shit. Yeah. And then someone's always like, whoa, beautiful.
That's what I was thinking. Like, couldn't they have just got someone who was actually good at art to draw those pictures?
Did they get the cameraman
to do
this?
So bad. The bit where he's like, oh, you didn't tell me you were an artist. It's like, she's not. That's why she didn't tell you.
It's so funny. This always happens. It's always crap.
It's true. Yeah. It's just
honestly, like, they're like, oh shit, we need a sketchbook. Fuck, can you get the costume lady to draw some like buildings? Like, can you get Barbara in?
She's like, I usually draw dresses, but okay. Starts like sketching a little dome with a cross on the top. It's like, yes. That's what we need.
It's so funny. Anyway, so she's sketching away, sitting by the water and like looking like a nun, and then. People are so clumsy in this movie. She's very clumsy.
Yeah.
And she trips over, falls in the water because she's eyeing, ogling up Kostas. And then she gets stuck. The jeans get her stuck in this, like, she almost drowns, whatever. Kostas saves her, the sexiest Greek man alive. He's so hot. And then they just have a summer romance, basically. She just comes out of her shell. That's kind of her storyline summed up.
Yeah.
And also... her grandma's all like, oh, you! I see shirt from man. Who are you? What man is it? From the village. And
at first she's all like, oh, yes, she's with a boy. Yeah. Very nice. But then.
But then yeah, I wrote down, oh, I love the grandma. And I'm like, oh, no, wait. So turns out their grandparents have an argument over fish. That's like, so they're basically the Romeo and Juliet of Santorini.
Yeah, and, that's what I wrote down as well.
Yeah, the grandma's like, you can't see this man, your grandpa, he will be so hurt, you can't, I forbid you, like, very extreme.
She's so intense, like, they just met as well, like, she only met her granddaughter for the first time, like, 2 days ago.
I know, imagine. So, she has a summer romance with him, they don't kiss for the longest time, they just go on, like, picturesque, like, motorcycle rides, and then stuff, and then... yeah, she just he likes her drawing, her crap drawing, and she starts dress. She's lets like physically letting her hair down, like literally.
Yeah. Literally, when she gets on his motorbike, she like takes out the clasp and shakes it down.
And then she starts dressing less boring, still kind of boring, but less boring.
They go to a house party where this, I found this really funny, like a Greek house party where everyone's like playing castanets and like traditional Greek music. It's like, I'm pretty sure they also had like, you know, like iPods and speakers and normal music in Greece as well. It's not like all the teens are like, oh, let me get my castanets out.
Let's play the sirtaki one more time. What happens then? Oh yeah, then the grandma storms in this party and is like, how dare you, and drags her away. It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
And then she finally stands, she's very sad, she misses Kostas, sexy Kostas, and then she stands up to her granddad and is like, yeah, I am allowed to love who I love. I don't know what she says. He doesn't understand English, but whatever. And then he's like, go. Oh no, because Kostas leaves for university. They're all older, these guys.
Yeah.
And the granddad just says, go. And then she goes to the dock and it's like, Kostas, I love you. And then they kiss right in a really passageway to the boat. People are supposed to get by that, but whatever. And then, yeah, that's nice.
It actually reminded me of the Across the Canal boat in Amsterdam, that boat. Because, like, you know, it's got, like, the ferry. The footway and then the bike bit. Really looked like that, but yeah.
Yeah. This is my life. Every time we get on that ferry, I kiss a group
like,
man.
Goodbye, Tone. I'll see you in 2 hours.
And then, so she returns home, like, completely new woman. That's kind of her storyline. Did I sum it up?
Yeah.
You want to add?
You did.
I'm gonna sip of
you
water.
Really did. I actually forgot to put on the timer, so I don't know if you went over the time or not, but...
Whole podcast is me talking about
Who cares? But yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. It does, like, her feelings get, like, pretty intense. Like, there's a part where she's like, I've never, like, I think it's so, because Kostas' parents died when he was, like, 12 or something, whereas she writes to one of the friends and she's like, I just think it's so sad how people like Bridget and Kostas, who've been hurt so badly, can really open themselves up to love, and nothing bad has ever happened to me, but I can't. It's like there's a part of me that's broken or something. I was like, whoa, this is very deep for a teen movie.
I know. It really is.
Also, there's so many, like, really cringy, like, rock, like, kind of teen rock songs in this film, like, with really cringy lyrics, like the part where she says where there's a voiceover of her saying that and then she strips off and dives into the water, there's this song playing that's like, turn my black roses red. It's like so cringe and like angsty.
She is living my sexy teen Greek dream. Let me tell you. Whoa, I wish I had this.
Yeah,
I wish I still had this.
She's kind of the only one, I guess, whose storyline that I would really be jealous of. The rest, I mean, same. I definitely don't want to go to soccer camp. That sounds fucking shit.
In Mexico, well, in Mexico. Yeah. I'd just be like skipping soccer camp.
And the other two are pretty depressing.
Having a shit time.
Yeah, so I'll get back to... I'll start with Carmen now.
Yeah, go for it. Let me have one sip of water before and then I'll set the timer. Okay,
All right. So Carmen's whole shtick is that she's going to stay with her dad in North Carolina. And her parents are divorced. That's another thing that you see at the start, is like him leaving when she was a kid. And they don't get to spend that much time together. So she says that she's never spent more than like 4 consecutive days with him since she was 10. But they're going to spend the whole summer together. So she's really excited. So her mom's Puerto Rican, so she's half Puerto Rican. Her dad's just white American. Just a very, very, very boring white guy. Like, has the most forgettable face. Like,
yeah,
just
kind of ginger.
Yeah. Kind of just actually kind of gross looking. But
yeah.
Anyway, he collects her, and then when they're like driving to his house, she realizes that it's like not they're going out of the city into the suburbs, and she was like, do you live in a development now? And he's like, yeah, I do. And she's like, oh, I thought you hated developments. And you can tell what's gonna happen. The viewer knows what's about to happen. So they pull up outside his like classic suburban white picket fence American home, and there's a beautiful blonde woman outside and like two blonde kids, and he's engaged to marry this woman, and basically has two stepkids, and he hasn't told his daughter.
You're so rude.
He says, I have a surprise for you. Who does that?
Yeah, that's so mean. It's so horrible.
Yeah, that is fucked up. That is probably one of the most unbelievable parts of the film, I would say. Like, I don't think there's anyone who just would just spring that. I mean, men can be pretty stupid.
Maybe. When they don't know, especially like older generation men are like, oh, I don't know how to tell you this, so where you go?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to wait till you see it for yourself. And she's like, you're getting, like, you live with another woman? And then she meets her children, who are like two kind of like perfect blonde American teens. Yeah. Like, there's a boy and a girl, and obviously like she's like a lot of these movies, this woman is like then like kind of cast into like a wicked stepmother role, but she's not actually that bad.
She's not
at all. She's just like a very basic white middle class American lady. Yeah. Like, she tries her best to make Carmen feel welcome, but Carmen kind of hates her from the start because, you know, I mean, but you kind of would, especially as a teenager, like, seeing your, like, with absolutely no warning, your dad basically having an entire new family. And she's always kind of suffered with, like, the, like, rejection that she has felt from her dad as well, because he left her and her mom and they never really spent time together. And basically, she finds out that night at dinner that they are getting married and that the wedding is at the end of the summer. So she's expected to be a bridesmaid and stuff as well, which is also nuts to just, like, find out. So she... not too much kind of happens in her storyline. It just kind of goes on and on. Like, she doesn't get on with the mom, the dad doesn't want to spend time with her, like, because he's too busy planning the wedding, so he doesn't take her to play tennis or whatever.
He's an arsehole.
This is like his only biological child that he has, like, not spent time with in, like, ages, and he does pretty much neglect her. So then they go to, like, a wedding dress fitting, where she's also getting her bridesmaid's dress fitted, and of course the dress fits the, like, skinny white like stepsister Krista, but it doesn't fit her because she's, like, really curvy, and she actually had, like, so I wrote down that when she puts the dress on, they all act like, oh my god, it's awful, like, it looks terrible. But I think in 2020, when, like, she actually has kind of, like, the dream bod with, like, a really big bum, she actually looks pretty good in the dress.
She does look good.
I don't know what they were all complaining about. Like, it was one of those things where, you know, she doesn't want to come out of the changing room or whatever, but I was like, damn, girl, I don't see what is wrong with this. But anyway, then she's like... Then the stepmom was like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, your dad, your dad guessed what size you were, he must have, like, got it wrong. And it's like, she's so angry then at, like, them, and she's like, well, I'm Puerto Rican and I have an ass and I don't look like you and your daughter. But it's like, this is the dad's fault. Like, he didn't tell her that he was getting married. And if he had, then he could have asked her, like, what size she was for the dress. It's just a very classic man thing as well, of just being like, oh
whatever.
I thought you were a size 6. But yeah, so then she like runs out of the wedding dress shop, leaving them all, like, really startled. And it is a bit, like, problematic. I mean, they definitely, like, are kind of just, like, it's kind of seems like the wedding dress designer has never designed clothes for somebody who isn't like a skinny white person, basically. But she's like, there is a bit of, like, that explored as well, in that, like, you know, she feels like such an outsider because she's not like this typical like white suburban middle class person. But she runs out of the wedding dress shop, and then later she gets a taxi home and the house is dark, and the driver asks her if she has a key because it looks like there are no lights on, and she's like, oh, they're probably all out looking for me. I know, it's really, really sad. So she obviously, like, kind of expects and also kind of hopes that her dad will be, like,
worried
about her and be out, like, roaming the streets looking for her. But then when she walks around the back, she sees they're just having, like, a cozy candlelit dinner in the kitchen, and they're all just sitting there like nothing else has happened. So then this bit is kind of crazy, though. I think she picks up
I understand her anger.
I just don't think I would ever do this. I was but like, whoa. She picks up a rock and throws it at the window, and it, like, smashes the window. Luckily it doesn't go through the window or hit anyone, but it, like, cracks it. And then she's like, I'm leaving. So then she goes and takes a bus back to her mom's house, and she says that she's, like, never, that she's not going to go to her dad's wedding or anything like that. But the kind of conclusion, how much time do I have left?
Oh, I think you're way over. You need to wrap that shit up, bitch. I've got 5 minutes left.
The conclusion is that she's like when she goes back, Tibby, who Heather's going to tell you about in a second, she
in 1 minute,
yeah, she tells her everything that happened, and Tibby, and she says like, I'm so angry at that woman and her stepdaughter, like they didn't have one fucking conversation that wasn't about the wedding, and like they've taken my dad away from me and stuff. And then Tibby was like, well, maybe they were just excited, and like, have you ever thought that maybe it's actually your dad's fault for not telling you, and that you maybe shouldn't blame it on this woman who was just trying to like include, she was trying to include you in her wedding, but she doesn't know you, so it must have been hard. And I just thought that bit was like so good, because she was kind of putting the blame the whole time on, like, you know, like women always get blamed for these things, and being like when there's, you know, when there's a kind of conflict between like parents or something like that, I feel like often it gets like put on like the woman to like resolve that, where it's actually her dad's responsibility to like
absolutely.
Take care of her and like make sure that she's included and stuff. So then she eventually admits that she's mad at her dad, which she has never been able to do, and she calls him and tells him how mad she is. But then at the very end of the film, the friends force her to go to his wedding, so they all go to his wedding together.
That's a bit strange, I thought.
Yeah, it is, especially because they all wear dresses and she wears the pants.
The jeans, yeah.
The magic, the traveling pants.
The magic pants.
Yeah, it is kind of weird, but
But also, I like the conversation with her dad, because he's still a bit of an arsehole. He still doesn't say sorry. He's like, oh, honey, you don't have to apologize. And she's like, no, like, I'm not going to apologize. Like,
I know.
You're the one, like...
She really tells him the truth, like, and it's kind of heartbreaking. Like, this is the part where I kind of started to well up, where she was like...
Oh, yeah, I've already cried at this point, I think.
She's like, you're falling over yourself to be Krista and Paul's dad, but you never even had time to be my dad. And that was so sad. Like, I really felt for her. But because she had like always kind of like idolized her dad and really wanted to be a kind of like daddy's girl, she had never like confronted him about the fact that she had all these feelings of like anger and rejection and stuff. So yeah, it is actually pretty powerful. Like, I started
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean I was feeling something.
I've cried.
I started crying then, and I think like I kept crying through what happens with Tibby, which I was going to tell you about, and also the Bridget's mom thing. I just didn't stop.
So Tibby is like the alt friend. She has a nose piercing that's way up high her nose. So I kept thinking it was like a mole or something. I was like, what's that on her nose? You know, I hate moles. So like, I was like,
Heather hates moles.
Loves Greek men.
Any of you followers got any moles? Just know Heather thinks you're fucking disgusting.
Don't say that. I don't want to mole shame people.
Hey, I've got moles and she thinks I'm disgusting, so she mole shames me all the time.
Anyway, back to my 7 minutes, or like 2 minutes I've got left.
7 minutes in heaven, baby. I'm going to set the alarm now.
Is the alarm set?
Yeah, go. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, go.
Go.
So Tibby is their old friend, has the nose ring. Oh, Tone just woken up. Weird. And so she works. She wants to make a documentary, and she's working at Walmart or something, some fake Walmart, and is having a shit old time and just stuck in their town. And I don't know why she didn't. She does explain all the questions I had about this movie. They do answer it. I'm like, why is she working in Walmart, not having a fun job? And then she's like, that was the only thing left. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair. And then she starts making a documentary. The jeans get brought to her by this young 12-year-old kid who's very sassy, very rude, kind of. But they develop a friendship, and this girl helps her with this movie. And turns out this girl's leukemia.
She's not really rude. She's more like just forthright. She's just like a kid in the sense that she just says what she thinks. But she's kind of annoying. She's a little bit bratty.
She's a little bit bratty, but they develop this friendship, and it's actually quite sweet and heartwarming. And this girl called Bailey, and she has leukemia, and then she dies. Yeah, that's kind of their hair storyline.
Wow, you really did get that over with quickly. no filler, and then she dies. So
that's when I started crying. I'm like sobbing.
Yeah, it's like, very, very emotional.
She goes to see her in the hospital, and then the girls are like. Like, it's about time you showed up. And I'm like, ugh. And then Tibby is like, oh, the jeans didn't bring me any magic. And then Bailey's like, yeah, they brought me to you. And I'm like crying my eyes out. It's so sad. It's, oh my God.
It's really, really like, it gets so intense. Like all this, the film starts out kind of boring. And like, there's a lot of like very corny, cheesy lines. And it's very like, just feels like it's not gonna like excite you in any way, that it's just gonna be a kind of very, very bland teen movie about like these four girls and how they spent their summers. And then in the like second half of the movie, it ramps up and like starts to hit you with all this stuff. And it's so, so sad when the little girl dies. It's like, just not what you expect going into it.
No. Yeah. But I was like I said to you before we start recording, I was so ready to hate this and be like sassy about it, and then I love it. It's so good.
Me
it's
too.
It's really also a bit when Bridget comes back, they talk about her mom. She says like, I don't want to feel sad, because if I'm sad and I'm like her, I'm like, oh, oof, like, right, the fucking feels. That is some deep shit.
Yeah,
this movie, man. I get goosebumps thinking about it.
Yeah, it was, and the part where she says like, if I just pursue being alive, like it will feel like she's not dead. I really felt that, and I just thought it was like so, I don't know,
poignant.
Yeah, and also relatable. But yeah, it was. Yeah. It's a good. It's a film that just kind of surprises you, I would say.
Yeah.
Like definitely, you think it's going to be something, and then it turns out to be completely something else.
I know. I was like, and these jeans aren't even they don't play a big part. They're kind of like a side.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, the pants didn't get too much airtime, thankfully. It's kind of just the like gimmick that's sort of tying the film together, I guess. But it could have been a story without the pants. You know, like it could have just been a story about four girls. It didn't need the pants.
No. But I guess the pants is more like, it's actually about friendship and finding yourself and growing up. That's what this movie's about. It's not about the pants. So I'm really glad.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she says at the end that like, the pants weren't really magic. All that stuff was going to happen to them all along. They just helped them to, like, see it or something like that. Which I thought, it is. It's a movie about, like, learning, like, growing up, like you said. Like, like learning how to stand on your own but still have friends. And also how to confront your feelings. Like, I thought that was the most deep part. Because they all have, like, something that they are struggling with emotionally. Like...
Mm.
Tibby kind of refuses to accept, like when she finds out that Bailey has leukemia, she doesn't want to see her anymore, because she like she kind of refuses to accept that she's gonna die, and her mom's like, come on, I'll take you to the hospital, and she's like, I'll go there later if I have time, like it's no big deal. And then Bridget's struggling with like her dead mom, and Lena's struggling with like the like not being open to love, and Carmen struggling with like the rejection from her dad, and they all in the end have to like confront the kind of like demons that they have. It's really good.
It's really good. I wish I'd seen this. Maybe I would have been really jealous, but also like I probably would have wished for like these best friends. And
yeah, me too. Me too. What was your favorite storyline, Lena?
Yeah, of sexy Greek man, the doy, like, yeah, this is what I want. This is still what I want.
I actually liked Tibby's storyline the best. I enjoyed watching the part where they interview like the losers of the town, like the freaks of Walmart and stuff like that. I really enjoyed those bits, and obviously like the ending is just like a fucking punch in the heart.
Yeah, it really is.
So yeah, that was I think I liked Tibby the best.
God.
I like how only two of them like found love as well. Like it wasn't like every one of them had to have like a boy in the storyline.
No,
actually only one
happen,
of them
actually.
Found love. Like Blake Lively did have like a romance storyline, but it wasn't like actual love.
Just her chasing a unwilling adult.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Kind of weird. I really hope that guy wasn't too old. Maybe we need to read the book to find out.
I know. I'm definitely reading the book after this.
I do want to read the book. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, let's read the book.
Yeah, let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, should we do bingo? Or do you want to discuss something?
Let's do bingo.
I've said everything I want to say.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just so overwhelmed again by talking about this movie.
Bingo. trips over.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, everyone's clumsy in this movie.
Apart from Bridget, who loves to run. I was very confused by that. At her mom's funeral, she takes her heels off and runs home. I was like, that's an odd move. But then it turns out she's a soccer queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, that makes sense. Running clears her head.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. Yeah. There is a very cringy scene where her and Eric are like, do you ever feel like when you're running, if you just keep going, nothing can touch you? It's like, oh my god, okay. That was still at the start of the film where I was like, this is corny as fuck.
Yeah, it's like, you love to think. You come here to think.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, do you come here to think? Oh, have you never brought anyone here before? Oh my god.
Have you told anyone that before? Whoa.
Dead parent, yes. Very, very sad. Dead parent. Hollywood dad.
No.
The dads in this movie suck. Zilch. Yeah.
No, that level is not
anti-Hollywood
that.
Dads in this film. sexual assault? No. Mean girl redemption? There are no mean girls in this film. Just four best friends.
Beautiful, lovely people that I want to have in real life.
Oh, how heartwarming.
I'm going to watch Gilmore Girls after this.
You're definitely be in the right mood for it now. Blanket heteronormativity? Yes.
Yeah.
No same-sex romances for these girls.
Maybe. This is part two of the book. Is like a series.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe Tibby. Dream.
She's the old one.
Dream, yeah.
That nose ring.
Dream bedroom.
Nose ring equals loving vagina.
It does.
Dream bedroom, oh, well. Yeah.
That's why we both have one. Makeover scene?
No. No, not the way we mean it.
Crazy teen rager? No.
That well, castanette Greek party.
I don't think we can call that a rager.
Maybe in Santorini it is. Yeah. They don't have iPhones yet in Greece.
It's true. They only know traditional Greek music.
Like a lute.
Annoying sibling. I feel like Bailey kind of fulfills that role in a way.
Nah.
But no.
No.
Prom? No.
Nope.
See, it doesn't have the school setting, so a lot of these are obsolete. You're throwing away your dream? No.
No.
And no quirky male friend either. No. So this is very low on points, very thin on the ground with tropes, because like we said, it's kind of a different teen movie.
Yeah.
It only got 6 points.
But it gets 10 out of 10 for me.
Oh, yeah.
For movie quality.
I think that's an important factor that we need to discuss as well. Like, what, even if it only ranks 6 out of 30 on the teen movie scale, where does it rank in our hearts?
10 out of 10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 for me too.
I can't believe I was so glib about it, or like, so like,
I know,
about it.
Such
and
an incredible turnaround.
I'm loving this.
I messaged my friend when I started watching it, being like, oh, have you ever seen Sister of the Traveling Pants? And she was like, no. And I was like, oh, I'm watching it now for the podcast. It seems pretty shit, to be honest. And she was like, oh, wow, I feel like loads of people love that movie. And I was like, yeah, it sucks. And then like an hour later, I was like, I'm crying. I love this film. Don't listen to hour ago me. Listen to me now. Yeah, it was an Same. Emotional roller coaster, that movie.
Same. I wrote down my notes like, oh, look at Bridget in her underpants in the shop. How stupid. And I'm like, next note, it's like, oh my god, like, life, hey. Death. Parents.
Yeah, it's really good.
Please go watch it.
Yeah, if you're looking for a lovely kind of like heartwarming film
if you're already feeling a bit sad but you can't quite access the sadness yet,
yeah, and you need to
it'll
cry
come out. This will tickle it out.
Oh, it'll come, I'll massage it out of you gently. if you have three best friends, perfect film for you as well. You can watch it with them. You can decide which character you all are. That's always fun.
Well, apart from the fact it's not like they're crap storylines, they're real sad.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely encourage you to watch this film. And we will be back next week with, in two weeks. I always say next week, but it's not actually every weekly, so I shouldn't make false promises. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another teen movie. Let us know on Instagram if there's anything that you want us to do in particular. Oh, I think we might be doing a Halloween special, actually.
Oh, yeah. We need to talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, because it's almost Halloween. So, yeah, stay spooky, bitches. And see you next time.
Bye. Bye.